It's a glorious but tragic romance set in exotic ancient Egypt. It's massive choruses and ballets, but also music of breathtaking intimacy. It's Aida. This is Roger Pines, editorial dramaturg of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and it's my pleasure to bring you this commentary on one of the most popular of all of Giuseppe Verdi's 28 operas. I'll be illustrating my comments with musical excerpts sung by Montserrat Caballé as Aida, Plácido Domingo as Radames, Fiorenza Cosotto as Amneris, Piero Cappuccilli as Amonasro, Nikolai Giaurov as Ramphis, Luigi Roni as the King of Egypt, and Esther Cassas as the Priestess. The chorus of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden and the New Philharmonia Orchestra are led by Riccardo Muti. Lyric Opera would like to thank EMI Classics for permission to use this recording. During the late 1860s, Verdi was much admired by the Khedive of Egypt. The Khedives were the Turkish viceroys who ruled Egypt between 1867 and 1914. This particular Khedive longed for a new Verdi opera that could premiere in Cairo. The obvious moment would have been the opening of the Suez Canal, and it's often mistakenly thought that that occasion and the Aida premiere coincided, but that's not true. On November 1, 1869, 3 weeks before the opening of the canal, the Cairo Opera House opened, and with a Verdi opera, but one that had long been internationally popular, Rigoletto. For the opening, Verdi was actually asked to write something along the lines of a ceremonial hymn, but he wasn't interested. We can easily imagine Verdi being in no particular rush to write a new opera. His last one had been Don Carlos in 1867 for Paris, and that was in every way a difficult experience. No doubt it didn't make him eager to get back into the fray anytime soon. For the next few years, sources for a libretto were frequently proposed to him by Camille Delocle, director of Paris's Opéra Comique and co-librettist of Don Carlos. Verdi was unwilling to commit until he was sent a scenario that instantly got his imagination and his creativity working, and in a big way. The scenario originated with a story by Auguste Mariette, the highly respected French Egyptologist, whom the Louvre had originally sent to Egypt to do research. He even undertook excavations in what had been the ancient city of Memphis, where Aida takes place. Mariette eventually founded the Cairo Museum and became well acquainted with a Khedive who gave him the title of Bey, that's spelled B-E-Y. At the time, being a Bey was almost like the Egyptian equivalent of being knighted. Mariette knew of the Khedive's longstanding wish for Cairo to have a Verdi premiere. He sent his story to Camille Delocle, who put it into scenario form and sent it to Verdi. The composer knew it would have tremendous appeal for any audience. Here was the perfect opera for the Cairo Opera House to commission. Verdi asked for an enormous fee, 150,000 lira. Once that was agreed to, he began work on the piece he referred to as the Egyptian business. It inspired him to investigate all things Egyptian, music, religious rituals, customs of all kinds. He needed a collaborator to expand on the scenario and chose Antonio Ghislanzoni, an especially prolific librettist. Just before the Aida project came to light, Ghislanzoni had worked with Verdi on revising La Forza del Destino. His libretti weren't all that innovative, but his language was careful, intelligent, and unpretentious, qualities that Verdi valued in working with any librettist. There was a good deal of correspondence between him and Ghislanzoni about Aida. You might wonder how Verdi's librettist managed to keep their sanity, since he was incredibly picky about his texts. Aida was no exception. Verdi scholar Roger Parker concludes that a great deal of the libretto was Verdi's own words, with Ghislanzoni often serving as essentially a versifying secretary. Aida was a departure for Verdi. Look at the eras of history in which his operas had taken place, anywhere between the 11th and 19th centuries. The only exception was ancient Babylon in his third opera, Nabucco, written nearly three decades before Aida. But an important similarity linked Aida to many of Verdi's previous works, from Nabucco, Ernani, and Macbeth, to Simon Boccanegra, Don Carlos, and Otello. These are all dramas concentrating in large part on the private lives of public personalities. Whether they're Egyptian or Ethiopian, we have royalty and nobility in Aida who must put on a certain face in public while revealing in private all their inner turmoil. Aida has the reputation of being the grandest of all grand operas, and certainly when you talk about the triumphal scene that closes Act II, you can't deny that opera doesn't come any grander. But Aida is an intimate drama. There are two soprano soliloquies, one for tenor, no fewer than five extended duets, two trios. You discover in listening that this opera isn't about elephants. It's not about how many warriors and priests and slaves you can get onto a stage. It's about two princesses, the man they both love, and the desperate struggles all three experience within themselves. The opera's premiere was delayed. The sets and costumes were being built in Paris. But with the advent of the Franco-Prussian War in 1870, Aida wasn't a high priority. The finished product didn't leave Paris for months. The opera had been scheduled to premiere in January 1871, but the premiere didn't take place until Christmas Eve of that year. The singers were predominantly Italian, but surprisingly enough, not the superstars of the day. Even more surprising, Verdi wasn't even present. Instead, he chose to devote his attention to the European premiere at Milan's La Scala a month later. For that production, he was very much involved in the planning, especially the choice of principal artists. He was especially devoted to the Amneris, the Austrian mezzo-soprano Maria Waldmann, and above all, to the Aida, the Bohemian soprano Teresa Stolz. 3 years later, she and Waldmann sang in the first performance of the Verdi Requiem, and it was Stolz who became Verdi's constant companion after his wife's death 16 years after the premiere of Aida. From the beginning, Aida was a fixture of major opera houses everywhere. It was irresistible, thanks to both the vocal and visual opportunities it offered to any opera house properly equipped to accommodate it. Look at any depiction of Aida in a major theater of the 1880s and 1890s, and you'll see that spectacle was the order of the day. But at the same time, Aida was a great showcase for every important Verdi singer. Even the most famous of all coloratura sopranos, the legendary Adelina Patti and Nelly Melba, were both unable to leave the role of Aida alone. In Verdi's career, Aida represents something of a crossroads. He was still writing what we would consider arias, and yet there aren't that many places in Aida where the music comes to a halt and the audience has a chance to applaud. The individual scenes themselves were moving toward the seamlessness that would be integral to his last two operas, Otello and Falstaff. At this point, Verdi's mastery of the orchestra was complete, and his interest in creating a sense of locale through the coloring of particular instruments was more vivid than ever before.